more bands should be realistic about what they actually want out of their careers. Having a more streamlined idea of what you want is way better than just leaving it as open-ended as we want to do this forever. If you're just going on tour just because you need to do it or you don't know anything else, you know, what are you doing it for?
Hey, I'll ask the questions around here. I'm Mike Moschetto. It's Selling Out. I'm the casino that pays nothing when you win. You're listening to Selling Out, a podcast about music and money where one's an unstoppable force and the other an immovable object. Just don't ask me which is which. I'm Mike Moschetto, and I'm excited about today's guest. It's someone I've wanted to have on since the very beginning. But first, if you'll indulge me, I should mention that in my extended bouts of downtime from making this podcast, I've kept myself busy by actually doing music rather than simply talking about it on here. Most recently, my jazz-influenced post-rock group Kind King has released our first of two new EPs just in the last week. It's called Apollonia, and here's a little clip of the title track. And in addition, I would be remiss if I didn't mention my wife on here, Amory Sievertson. She has an album's worth of new material that I had the pleasure of producing and mixing over the years. It's her first new music in almost 8 years, so we've been putting it out song by song over the last few months in a steady drip rather than the whole record at once, just to maintain whatever buzz we can generate over a longer stretch. Here's a clip of the first single we put out called Walk in the Woods. Crying. The hell are you? Well, ooh, he needs to know I am one among many. No hero, no traitor. Signal me later and on we will go. If you want to learn more about either of those projects, I've linked to them in the description of this episode, and I would really appreciate your interest. But onto the matter at hand. Seamus Menahane is a drummer who you might know from bands like My Fictions, Vatnet, and Vanna, but who also did tours filling in for even more acts you might recognize like Lydia, Astronoid, and Hit the Lights. So he has experience on the road and in the studio that ranges from DIY warrior life to big budget genre mainstays. And now he's transitioned out of gig life of his own accord and is running a really impressive operation called Downright Merchandise. I stopped by his warehouse in Haverhill, Mass. To chat with him for this episode. Enjoy.
Do you remember the one night we walked by a roadhouse? I could feel the panic on your skin as you looked up at the window, still shattered from when you fell.
So I think the way that I first became aware of you was through, at the time it was A Breath Beyond Broken. Was that your first band?
Yeah, first actual band.
Sure.
Like before that, I'd played in my garage with a couple friends and just done covers. And that was my first band where we actually like had a group of people writing original songs.
Going for it, sort of.
Right, exactly.
I remember before I even knew you, there was like a full U.S. tour that you guys did.
Mm-hmm.
And how old were you at that point?
17.
Yeah, so 16? Were you kind of like the baby of the band? Or
yeah, so I was, I think our first tour that we did, I was 16 years old. They had one booked the year before when I was 15, but my parents didn't let me go. Which, looking back, is like totally fair because I wouldn't let my 15-year-old kid go on tour.
Wouldn't let my 18-year-old kid go on tour. So you kind of drafted into gig life right out of high school. But does that mean that you didn't go to college, anything post-high school?
Nope, didn't go to college. I went on tour after high school. Like that's
those were your like plans?
Yep, those were my plans. That was my plan from, I think, freshman year, maybe even before that.
That's what's up.
I wanted to be in a band and tour, and to be honest, I didn't even want to go to high school. I was just, by the time I was in high school, I already wanted to be in a band and I already wanted to be on tour. So after those 4 years, I was like, okay, this is time to actually try to do it.
So, this is huge. You don't carry the burden of student debt like many idiots like myself do. I went to college because I wanted to be a record producer.
Really?
It's fucking so stupid. In hindsight, I mean, it was a cool experience and I'm glad I went for a lot of other reasons, but like, my God, like, just show me gearsluts.com and like, I should be good for several years.
Yeah, but you learn, I feel like with that, you learn a solid foundation on all the technical aspect of it.
Yeah, there is something about focusing on it for like several hours a week, like intensively, right. And, you know, I guess sinking a lot of money into it. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it now looking back, but it was still cool. And the program that I was in specifically, this is more about me than I want to divulge, but
I'm curious.
It was mostly for guys who wanted to go into audio for film and TV.
Right.
I didn't want that. I was like, I took the studio recording classes at Emerson, which were, they were electives. Like, they didn't count toward my degree. They were just like extra credits that I was doing. Mm-hmm. So it was a little flummoxed by that. I got most of what I got out of school by working at the radio station and stuff, which is how I have my job now. So I guess it's all good. But I mean, I guess talk about how that lack of financial burden has kind of freed you up to pursue these things.
It's been great because obviously there's no student debt that's been kind of looming over me and impacting the way that I make the decisions of what I want to do, you know, because it's one thing to go to college and graduate, which is great. Like I said, like, you probably learned a lot of your chops from.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, there's nothing wrong, I feel like, with going and pursuing it that way. But the one thing that I would say is it frees you up. Not having that frees you up to do what you want afterwards, because you don't have that debt and you don't have that, like, I need to make this amount to pay monthly, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that's always, like, that's been the way that I've looked at it, is like, that's such an added benefit for not doing it, is like, I didn't have anything where I was like, oh, I need to get a job and pay off my student debt. I can kind of just do what I want to do.
So, like, single-mindedly performing, playing mm-hmm. drums or touring.
Yeah.
Yeah. To my recollection, anyway, correct me if I'm wrong, once A Breath Beyond Broken turned into My Fictions, mm-hmm. never toured quite as much, or not as extensively anyway.
So I think right when we made the switch from A Breath Beyond Broken to My Fictions, we did like a summer tour, or we did a few tours. But before that, we had booked everything ourselves too. So when we turned into My Fictions, I think the first tour we did as My Fictions, or the second tour we did, we had like a booking agent. We kind of passed some of that along to somebody else to do for us. But before that, I think we were touring more because we were just booking the shows ourselves.
You wanted to get out there.
Yeah, we just wanted to go and play, and we would all meet up at Tyler's house and send like a million emails to like whoever we could find on the internet to try to book a show. And with me being in high school, we only had like a few months out of the year where we could actually go and make a full lap around the country. So we tried to take advantage of that. And I think we did like two full US tours as A Breath Beyond Broken. But then when we switched to My Fictions, I think we did like a 2-week tour, 3-week tour. And then we did like one East Coast into the Midwest run. And then by the end of that, I think it was starting to taper off a little bit.
Is that what made you want to get involved with other projects on the side? And
yeah.
Just the desire to get on the road?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I think when it started to taper off a little bit, I still wanted to tour because I feel like I never really got to the point where I wanted to go with My Fictions, but I still wanted to tour and still wanted to travel and play. So that's when I started playing with more artists and
trying to
start more bands.
You started Great American Ghost at that point, right?
Yeah.
And then Vatnet too.
Vatnet, yeah. Well, Vatnet was a band, and then they asked me to fill in on a tour in like 2013, and then after that tour, it led to me recording with them and then joining the band full time.
See, I thought that you were in there from the jump.
No, they had another original drummer that just couldn't do a tour, and Chris, the guitar player, hit me up and asked if I wanted to fill in, and from that it kind of just led to joining the band and being a member.
And that seemed to take you places in a way that other groups did not.
Vatnip?
Yeah.
At that time, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And during all of this, what are you doing for work on the side?
Like, whatever I can.
Okay.
Whatever I can do. I worked at a couple venues. I did security at a venue. I was a loader and a runner at a venue.
Okay.
I think up until 2013, I was just working odd jobs because I'd been out of high school for a few years at that point. and just kind of doing whatever I could to make a few bucks. I still lived at home, which obviously I didn't have, you know, I didn't have too many expenses.
That's dope.
But yeah,
that's the way to do it.
It was pretty tight. Yeah. But up until 2013, just doing odd jobs. And then 2013, I started working at a screen printing company and kind of got involved in the, like, the merchandise side of things. And after that, once I started doing that, I was still working odd jobs, but that was kind of my, my main job, where I could do that when I was on tour and still have a steady job at home.
So VatNet started by asking you to fill in, but other bands seemed to soon follow. Like, I remember hearing that you were going to the UK with Hit the Lights, and I was like, damn. So where do those offers start coming from? Just word gets around from this or that?
Yeah, I think after VatNet, I think after that, I wanted to be like more of a fill-in session guy as opposed to like a full-on band member.
Okay.
Which I've only been in like two or three bands. You know, I played in VatNet, I played in My Fictions, and then I played in Vanna for a little bit. And then between that, I've just tried to fill in the gaps with touring and filling in for really whoever needs a drummer, you know?
And when these come around, like say a Lydia, for example, or Astronoid, do they ask you and you're like, hell yeah, I'm in, let's do it? Or does it start from the point of, well, what does it pay? Do you know what I mean? Like, what is the incentive to get out there for you?
My initial response is, hell yeah, let's do it.
That's what's up.
And then it's, how am I going to make this work? You know?
Okay.
And it's like, what can we do to kind of make this work on my end? Because obviously as time has gone on, I've, you know, I have more expenses than when I was just living at home and could just take off for 3 months at a time and have no repercussions from that, you know?
Sure, totally.
But since being an adult and having more responsibility, then after hell yeah, let's do it comes, you know, this is kind of what I need to make it work on my end. And if we can do that, let's do it.
And have you had to turn down anything for reasons other than like, oh, I'm busy then, or, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's been a couple where it's just either there's like no budget to pay and it's like a touring gig. Like, I feel like touring and doing session work is pretty different, where like, I mean, I just love playing drums. So I'll play on a song and like, you don't have to pay me to play drums.
Like in the studio. You mean?
Yeah. Especially if it's for a friend's band. Obviously, there are certain scenarios where if it's like someone that I totally don't know and they just need someone to just like lay down drum tracks, it's different than a friend or a band that I like that wants me to be involved in their project, which I'd be more inclined to just do so because I enjoy doing that, you know?
And how do you determine what the value of that is? Like, how do you come up with what you would want for payment?
I mean, I factor in what I think the band's budget would be.
Okay.
Just being real. Like,
that's nice.
You know, like if it's a bigger band and I kind of have an idea that, you know, maybe someone is paying for the recording session, like a label or whatever, then I'd factor that into my decision. But and the amount of the workload going into it, because a session, I mean, as you know, it's not just showing up and playing the drums. There's a lot of like work beforehand. Like,
yeah, prepping.
Prepping,
learning
exactly.
The tunes.
So when somebody sends me like 10 songs that they need like for a full record, then it takes like a month or sometimes more just to like learn all the, you know, all the drum parts and maybe come up with my own drum parts if they've asked me to do so. So I take that into consideration when I'm kind of figuring out what, you know, what I would need on my end to be a part of it.
How often do those come your way?
Not so much anymore.
Okay.
I'd say like a few years ago, not super frequently, but like, you know, enough where it was like a steady stream of work. It's definitely slowed down the past few years because I've kind of gone a different route the past couple of years. I haven't been touring or haven't been, I mean, I've been playing, but I haven't really been, it hasn't been my main focus.
Is Vanna the last band you joined?
Yep.
Now, this is probably after filling in for other groups, right? Mm-hmm. So what motivated the decision to kind of like put yourself out there and join that band rather than just like, did it start as fill-in work and then evolve or?
Yep. Okay. That's how it started. So it initially started with them looking for somebody to just record their new record, which became All Hell, which is the last record that the band did. They were just looking for someone to help write and record. And I agreed to do that. And then I saw them, they had some dates come up and I was like, guys, do you need a drummer for this? Like, I didn't know if they already had somebody or if they they didn't want me to play the shows. So I remember I called them. I was like, you know, if you need somebody, I'm available and I'd love to do it. And yeah, they're just like, oh, we didn't think that you would want to do that. And I was like, yeah, of course.
So that's like a big deal, I would say.
Yeah, I think at that point that was probably the biggest like the biggest band that I'd played in, and obviously I was familiar with their music and have known them for a while.
I mean, they're kind of just ambiently in the. Yeah, around here.
Yeah, I mean, they've been at that point they were doing it for a while, and I'd known all the guys for a few years at that point.
It had to have been like 10 years by the time you joined, at least. Yeah. Already.
Yeah, I think they started in like 2004, I want to say. Insane. Maybe a little bit before that. So they had already been around for like 10 years at that point.
So what was the experience of being on the road with them, like versus other experiences that you've had?
It was a lot different because it was more I guess more professional, for lack of a better word. Like that was
that
was
something.
The first band where we had like management agent that I was in.
Probably that, know where you're sleeping every night.
Okay. I wouldn't go
right.
That far.
All right, okay. Back off.
In that realm of things, it was very similar to what we would do before. Like they still toured like kind of DIY. Like we were still in a van and trailer and staying with friends every night.
Okay, cool.
Which was sick because yeah, I enjoy doing that. So it. Yeah, it was very similar to my touring experiences with bands before that. But as far as being on a tour, like a tour package and having the same four bands every night going around the entire country for 6 weeks, I think that was probably the most, for lack of a better word, professional touring experience to that point.
You probably have like per diems and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you come away from a tour like that with money in your pocket, or is it just like, oh, it kind of cancels out?
I think for that tour, it canceled out for me because I had so Vatnet was also touring. During my first tour with Vanna, Vatnet also had something booked, so I had to leave the Vanna tour like halfway through and go do these Vatnet shows. But luckily, we had a friend that filled in for Vanna, and the tour continued, and they weren't super mad at me that I had to leave halfway through. But
if anyone's going to understand that they're in other bands,
you know? I think it was in the Vatnet tour was already booked before I'd confirmed doing the Vanna thing, so I had to get a plane ticket and get out of there and go play shows with Vatnet. But yeah, for the most part, I mean, it's different for a tour where you're like one of four. You know, obviously the money isn't great for something like that. You can still get, I know we're still doing per diems, and you know, you can live off $10 a day if you really try. So
yeah, sure.
At least at that point, you're not spending money to be out on tour. Like I would do something like a break even thing like that if it's just, you know, if I'm not spending money to be on the road.
This, to me at least, strikes me as a career highlight, going to South America to drum tech for Mayhem.
Yeah.
So, had you drum teched before? Like how?
Yeah.
Okay.
A little bit.
Okay.
I mean, I did a tour with Gwar, like...
That's right.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah. I drum teched for them, like, maybe 4 years before that. What was it, 2013, 2014? I did, like...
Was that when before Dave Brocky
died?
Yeah,
I think that was, like, the tour before he had passed away.
Oh, my gosh.
But yeah, it was only like a handful of shows, but I did that, and then yeah, I went to South America with Mayhem, which going to South America was great. You know, it's like how many times you get to
To Brazil.
Come to Brazil, yeah, exactly.
So is that something you like set out to do more of?
No.
Or? No?
Okay. No, it was a friend of mine that worked for them, and he said that they needed somebody for those specific dates, and then he just passed it along my way.
I know some cats just like being out on the road, whether they're playing or whether they're not.
I know a bunch of people that do both, that tech and play.
Okay.
I'm not a drum tech. I'm like not a good drum tech.
You want to play?
I want to play. By like the second show, I'm like, yeah, I really want to play drums. I don't want to just set them up.
Yeah, right. I mean, I would have to imagine that Hellhammer has kind of an exacting...
He's so sick.
Yeah?
Yeah.
They, like, what's the treatment like on something like that?
Great. They're all cool.
Being part of the crew is...
Yeah, they're all chill.
Yeah.
I didn't know them before. My only, like, connection with them was my friend who had tour managed them in the States. But, yeah, they were chill.
Okay. You know, I never felt like anyone was going to, like, maybe kill you in the night or...
No.
That's good.
No. South America is definitely sketchy. Like, touring
South America.
No, I mean,
like, the black metal band.
Oh, no, no, no. Not from them.
Oh, that's good.
Just South America in general is just touring there was kind of sketchy.
Yeah.
As you'd expect.
Well, I mean, I don't know what I expect, but...
Have you ever been there before?
No, I haven't.
Yeah.
Where did you go? Where all did you go?
Man, we went everywhere. We were there for, like, 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I think the whole tour was like 3 weeks. And like, you never hear about people going to South America for 3 weeks. That's either you're going in for like a festival or like Brazil, Argentina, Chile, like big markets and then leaving. But I think we went to Paraguay. We had like 5 shows in Brazil. So we were there for a while.
Wow.
They covered some ground.
And how are you getting around? Is it like flying?
Oh, yeah, flying. 6 a.m. flights every day.
My God.
So
that's insane.
I didn't know that going in. I was like, I wonder if. Because I'd never toured South America before, but I think that's par for the course for South America is fly dates.
Yeah, that seems like that's how it is for, I think, Australia too, right?
Yeah, I've never been to Australia, but I think so because you see like
it's just huge and there's just nothing between major cities.
Right, exactly. It becomes like it's more cost effective just to fly your entire band to the next city instead of driving through through the desert.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. So as you've mentioned a couple times, you're not doing as much performing or playing in bands right now.
Right.
At some point you got really involved in the merch game.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're sitting in your offices of Downright Merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I can tell, you're doing like artist exclusive fulfillment. I think the best analog I could think of, not that I want to name drop your competitors, but like what, like All In, Kings Road, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So
very similar.
It seems like it springs pretty naturally out of your experience of being on the road, networking, hobnobbing.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you kind of get exclusive clients for something like this?
A lot of it is people and managers that I met with from playing in bands and just bands that I met from doing it over the past, you know, almost 10 years. A lot of it is just like old friends that need a merch company or need t-shirts printed and, you know.
Do you go to them and say like,
sometimes.
By the way, I have this. Okay.
Sometimes. Yeah. I think when I was touring, I was doing that more frequently. I was like approaching more people. But now, I mean, I still definitely approach people all the time to work together. But yeah, it definitely transitioned from touring to doing this full time was like a natural progression for me because I knew that I wasn't going to want to tour all the time forever.
Okay.
So I kind of wanted to figure out something that I could go into from touring, and I always really liked the merchandise side of things. I was always really like interested in like you know, like merch designs and ordering merch, and I was kind of always the one that would like handle that or at least have some sort of involvement in doing it. So yeah, it just kind of seemed like a natural progression for this to be where I transitioned to from touring.
You know, we were talking about Mike from Merch Lords ML before we started, and he kind of got me interested in it a little bit because he would say like, oh, just get a ton of designs, but not that many of them, and you'll like sell more. Just have like a crazy display and like people will go after it. Just like the kind of the marketing, I guess, the psychology of
totally
having a merch display on the road.
Yep. I mean, it's definitely important, like especially for like, you know, for our bands, for My Fictions and Aviator, like that was gas money every night. Like,
oh,
that's
God.
How we were getting to the next city was,
yeah, it wasn't
those
through,
five t-shirt sales.
It wasn't guarantees.
No, absolutely not. Because we didn't do guarantees when we booked tours. It was just like an understanding that if the show happened, there would be gas money that would like
hopefully
be
yeah.
thrown our way, you know?
Yeah. I love when there isn't that understanding though. That's
yeah.
Yeah, so it seems like the transition out of touring was deliberate then.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not just like, I kind of got involved in this and now I'm kind of stuck here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I decided after, I think, like end of 2018 that I wanted to do this more seriously and kind of step away from touring full time.
Or at the end of Vanna?
Yeah, kind of. End of Vanna and then towards the end of playing with Astronoid and Lydia.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, after that, I was still doing this. Like, I started Downright Merch in, like, end of 2017, early 2018.
And did you start just working from home, or...
Yep. Okay. Yep, I started working from my parents' house, right, which on. I wasn't living at the time. They just have a basement that I'd go there and ship out.
What are they doing with it?
Yeah, seriously.
Laundry,
exactly. So I would ship out orders from there, and from there we got a small, maybe like 400 square foot office that we moved into, and we've moved a few times since. But yeah. Where's I going with that?
I don't know. And so is this is your full time?
Yes, this is my full time gig now.
And you don't, no odd jobs?
No.
Did you teach lessons for a while?
For a minute, yeah.
Not still doing that?
No, not teaching anymore. Decided I'm no teacher.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess it's better for you to decide that than a student.
Yeah, definitely. That. And I think my way of teaching was not like I kind of just taught from firsthand experience.
Sure.
Which was cool, which a lot of my students were into, and I think with that though, it comes a point where it's kind of tricky to keep the lessons going. But yeah, I was doing that for a while. That was like definitely a between tour job that I was doing for a while. And I was doing it on tour. I was doing like Skype lessons.
Yeah.
No more odd jobs. This takes up all of my time.
And do you have staff?
Yeah. So we have four employees right now.
Full time?
One full time, two part time, and then two salespeople.
Right on.
So yeah, everybody works from here, and we're here Mondays through Fridays, 8 to 6, you know,
for all your merch needs.
Yeah, for all your merch needs.
So when you're hiring people, should they be as connected as maybe you were, like especially in a sales role, I guess, right?
It depends on the role in the business, because for the salespeople, yeah, usually it's if they're selling to bands, but we do way more than just bands. Like we also do like custom screen printing and embroidery and promotional items for small businesses and, the clothing lines. Like the band merch thing is kind of just how we started, but we've kind of
And what percentage would you say like band merch takes up?
I'd say for Downright merch, probably like 80% of our business is
so
band
it's still
merch.
The lion's share.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I'm looking at the wall over here, and I see CeeLo Green,
which,
you know, we could be talking about like, you know, My Fictions and even Mayhem for like an hour, and then some of, you know, eyes just glaze over. But then I say, CeeLo Green, huh? You know,
yeah,
so that's a big one.
Yeah, so we do all of his merchandise, and it's not just like metal and hardcore bands, which is cool, which I really like, because like that's the first clients we got were all like my friends, so it was all like metal and hardcore bands. But we've definitely I've tried to have like a diverse clientele list. You know, we do everything from CeeLo and like hip hop rap artists and
anyone else I'd know. Or
we have
I know who Emerosa is.
Yeah,
I know who Unearth is, of course.
Unearth.
Sammy Adams, okay.
Yeah, Sammy Adams.
You know, I just remembered the Rihanna shirt and the black metal.
Yeah. That's when I was still screen printing.
I was kicking around still?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I think I sold all of them.
Damn.
I found like a box of them. Like when I was moving, I found like maybe 15 or 20 of those. That's so stupid.
Well, yeah, you know,
When you talk about odd jobs, that was like a thing. I was like, oh, I'll just put this design up and see how it does. And like I think like 200, 300 people ordered it.
Well, it's just little things, stupid things like that, right? Like I think the apocryphal story of Defeaters, before they were called Defeater, they were called Sluts. And they had stickers that were just said, I heart Sluts. And they would sell those. And they like
Shout
financed
out to J-Moss.
Something that way. And like that, it just takes something like that to kind of get
Dude,
the ball rolling.
I remember
rolling.
Seeing those all everywhere.
Yeah, it was like 2008, 2009. Yeah. The world is going to hell. No heaven to buy, no soul to sell. The world is going to hell. No heaven above, straight to hell. What would it take, if anything, to kind of get you back out on the road at this point?
Good question.
Thank you.
I think at this point, I wouldn't be interested in doing any full-time touring until, I wouldn't rule it out forever. I just think...
The right offer comes along.
Right. Exactly. And I would have to like move some things around here to make it so this, because this is a priority now, you know? Especially when it's having like a handful of employees, like I can't dip out and like... You know,
there's not a second in command who could kind of keep the
Ricky,
ship up.
Yeah, Ricky could keep everything rolling. Ricky works right there, and he's my main guy that does that. He's awesome, but he could keep everything going. But I don't want to do.
You don't want to be away from it that long.
That would be an irresponsible decision on my part if I was just like, you know, I'm out, guys. See you.
You've like had your fun and you're like,
yeah, totally.
Wow.
Totally. But like, I think in the future, I'm not ruling it out for good.
Yeah.
Maybe in the future, if the right offer comes along, I would do it. But like I said, I just have to like figure out the best way to get out of here for 4 weeks and not have, you know, the whole thing.
Bills hanging over your head.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. My experience anyway is that I'll see people who are going out and doing it and I still feel the pangs of like, oh, I wish that were me still.
Yeah, same.
You, okay. Yeah.
Big time.
Okay.
You're no, not, totally not at all. Not at all. I mean, I feel like, yeah, I should make that clear. It's not like, oh, I don't want to do it. I would still like, I still see my friends that are on tour and I'm like, that looks fun.
Yeah.
Like I miss that. So I there's still a desire to go out and play and to tour. There's more of a desire to do this at this point, just
that's
because
cool.
I was doing that for like almost 10 years, you know, and and I did most of the stuff that I wanted to do.
Yeah, yeah. You went overseas.
Yeah. That was a big one, was just getting to go to Europe and kind of just see more than just the Midwest.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of my thing too, right? Like, I remember at one point, maybe in 2013, we had like a band meeting when I was an aviator, and we talked about like, what do we want to accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
Put out records, tour Europe.
Yeah.
And we did that. So I, you know, whenever I see people touring, I have to kind of check myself and be like, you know, I should be happy with what I've done.
I think more bands should be realistic about what they actually want out of their careers and what they want out of their trajectory as a band, you know? I think it's way too open-ended to just say we want to be a band and we want to be successful and we want to, like, do this full-time. I think having, like, a more streamlined idea of what you want to take out of it is way better than just leaving it as open-ended as we want to do this forever. And,
yeah.
You know?
And I think, too, that I've talked about this on the show before, but one of the things that I think defines being a full-time band, whether you're making money from it or not, is the extent to which you're organizing your life around it, like
right. Working
odd jobs that you don't mind losing just to be able to go out on the next tour or whatever, whether you come back with money or not.
Right.
And just, you know, throwing money into the pit and just lighting it all on fire. So that's a hard calculus to play as time goes on.
Yeah, but the other thing is you can't just continue doing it just because you don't want that momentum to go away, because at that point you're like, you know, what are you doing it for? If you're just going on tour just for the sake of, you know, of just because you need to do it or you don't know anything else, then it's like...
Well, one would hope it's still fun.
Yeah, definitely. And it probably is still fun. But I guess it just depends on like what you want out of it. You know what I mean?
What if it's not fun anymore?
I mean, it can definitely not be fun.
What if we got off the road and then it got bad? Maybe we like timed it perfectly.
Yeah. If it just stopped being fun.
Yeah. That would suck.
Yeah. I mean, DIY touring is definitely fun.
Yeah.
You know?
It has its, like you said, it has its ups and downs.
Yeah, totally. Like there's definitely something to be said about just getting in a van with your friends and just like, I hope this show happens and I hope we make it home.
Hoping it happens is a low bar.
Yeah. Well, like with the first shows that we booked, like a lot of them didn't happen. We'd show up and there'd be like, you know, there'd be nobody there. There'd be like, the bartender would be like, yeah, we have no show tonight.
Oh my God.
I don't know
how many times I've told this story, but we were booked at Metro Gallery.
I know that place.
In Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
And it got moved from the night show to a matinee. And then we got to the matinee and doors were open for an hour and nobody came. So they're like, why don't you guys get out of here?
They
canceled
told
it.
You to leave?
Yeah, yeah. And then everyone went and saw John Wick.
So it all worked out better than playing to nobody seeing John Wick, though.
Yeah. And then as we were packing up, two kids came and they were like, oh, can we at least buy a hoodie? I was like, yes, you can.
So you essentially drove all the way to Baltimore to sell two hoodies?
Well, but we also played like a secret show that night
in
D.C. somewhere.
That shit will definitely happen, though. Like, we've definitely showed up to shows and the, like I said, the bartender or the owner of the bar will be like, yeah, we don't. There's nobody named this person that you're saying booked the show.
And, oh, my God.
And there is no show happening tonight.
Yeah.
And then we just leave. That's definitely that happened to A Breath Beyond Broken quite a few times.
You know? Yeah, I mean, you book stuff on MySpace. That's what happens.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what we would do. We would book the whole tour through MySpace.
And then, I don't know. It transitioned to, like, Facebook, Bandcamp, Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, oh, cool. We have three sites now we have to use.
Yeah. Yeah.
Twitter? Don't get me started. Instagram? Give me a fucking break. It's all bad, but hey, you know, you can find us on Twitter and now Instagram at sellingoutad. You can send your questions to the Instagram or to sellingoutpodcast@gmail.com, and I hope to bring some of them up on the show. If you liked anything you heard today, there is honestly no shortage of good music to which Seamus is attached, but I will try to link as much as I reasonably can in the episode description. And of course, I've added all the songs featured in today's show to our growing Spotify playlist, which is also linked. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/selling out podcast. You can always leave a nice 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice. It really does help people find the show. You know, I think I'd like to chart this year. Let's make that our shared New Year's resolution. Get Selling Out on the Apple Podcast charts. Or you can just tell a friend, tell somebody at work, tell whoever's listening. It'll make great water cooler conversation, I'm sure. I'm sure of it. Oh, I heard about this drummer who lived on $10 a day on the road. Oh, really? Oh, that's cool. Yeah, something like that. You know, you can ad-lib it to make it more palatable sounding. Photography by Nick DiNatale. Theme music by Such Gold. I'm Mike Moschetto. Thanks for listening to Selling Out.